fighting for America.
Republicans should stop holding our Homeland Security hostage.
The president needs to listen to the American people and say, yes, let's build the Keystone Pipeline.
Fighting for Idaho.
What we are teaching young people right now is if you love someone, beat the heck out of them. If you love someone, choke them, whip them, torture them.
Fighting for you.
Brian Williams. It's almost as if the libs are reluctantly carrying the water on this story.
Well, what are you talking about? He cured cancer and landed on the moon.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
How can you criticize somebody that did these things?
Right.
Winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Thank you all for joining us. A pleasure, a blessing to be with you. I hope you had a good weekend. We had a chance to do some blogs at 580KIDO.com. And there were some interesting ones that I kind of came up with. Opinion polls. Number one, is Idaho ready for constitutional carry? You have Senator Marv Hagedorn that will have a hearing on his Senate bill this week. And essentially what it does is it strips state representatives, state senators, from being able to conceal carry without any permits, concealed carry permits. And Senator Hagedorn has looked at this bill. Remember, this bill got taken down last year in the controversy involving campus carry and everything else, right? So we have that going on. You have our friend Greg Pruitt from the Idaho Second Amendment Alliance, who is speaking out against this bill, who is basically saying it's a bad bill. And then we have the situation going on in the Middle East where the White House avoids mentioning that 21 beheaded Christians were Christians. Would you ever see a day in America where an administration in the land of religious freedom, in the land of everything else, what's good and wholesome, would not stand up for Christianity? So we will talk about that today. Also, Boise Mayor Dave Beter is picking up where we've been for quite some time. We welcome the mayor to our party in an editorial in yesterday's paper saying that Boise, the Idaho Air Guard, must be a part of the Air Force's future. We've been talking about this, our concerns for the longevity and the viability of Gowan Field. Lots of layoffs have been going on. Certainly when you're talking about the future of Gowan, one has to wonder, will our congressional delegation have the might to make that happen? You know what I'm saying? Will we have enough sway to be able to save Gowan Field? And there have been a lot of hidden layoffs going on out there. A lot of people have lost their jobs, right? Amazing. Plus the fallout over the American sniper. You've got the sister of one of the victims in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, saying, quote unquote, there is a war on Muslims. Joining us now from a warriorsfaith.com is author Robert Vera to talk a little bit about serving our country and, of course, other issues of the day. Mr. Vera, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. You're with Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO. So let's talk a little bit about your book and the idea of deployments and the issues that it has on these returning veterans coming home. Certainly, when we hear about the trial of the murder of Chris Kyle and others, could this be happening elsewhere? People having trouble coping, returning from deployments?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. That's a really important question. I think the movie American Sniper, what it does is it really shows that the real war is right here at home. We've lost more veterans and service members to suicide than we have to both Iraq and Afghanistan. So it's an important, you know, just a really important message. I mean, in fact, one of the most powerful things for me, I saw the movie American Sniper. I knew Chris Kyle, and I knew Ryan Jobe, who I write the book about. And one of the most powerful images for me was not really the images on the screen. And I won't ruin it for everybody, but at the end of the movie, I turned around to the left and right of me, and people were crying. And I think that showed for the first time that Americans have felt the sting of loss, the shock of it, and they were calibrated in a way that I don't think they have been ever before.
Well, and you discuss this in your book about Ryan, and you talk about Ryan's struggles, and talk a little bit about how you met him and your friendship with him.
Yeah, let me bring the listeners up to speed a little bit. Many have seen the movie American Sniper and perhaps read the book. The book was written by Chris Kyle, and the movie's about Chris Kyle, a Navy SEAL who served on SEAL Team 3. He dedicated his book to a SEAL colleague, Ryan Jobe. Ryan Jobe was on the roof with Chris Kyle when Ryan was shot in the face by a sniper. He was subsequently made blind. The movie depicts Ryan, which his name in the movie is Biggles. It was a nickname given to him by a SEAL team. The movie depicts Ryan dying several days after being shot, but he in fact lived 3 years. He passed from this world on September 24th, 2009. Nevertheless, Ryan, after he was wounded, he moved to Arizona, where I live now. We were introduced by a mutual friend and just became very close friends. The first day I met Ryan Jobe, he told us what happened to him on the roof. He showed us his prosthetic eye with his SEAL trident fashioned into the pupil. And then he turned to me and said, "Hey, you know, I've heard you've done a few Ironman triathlons. I'd love to do one of those. And I have an opportunity to climb Mount Rainier. Do you want to train with me?" And I just thought that was incredible. Here's a blind guy who, you know, could have just cashed it in, right? He was married. He was in school full time. And he was just, you know, still really just getting after it. I mean, he just wanted to, he just refused to wear the label of victim or wear a label of disabled. He did summit Mount Rainier. I mean, in July of 2008, Ryan Jobe, totally blind, climbed to the summit of Mount Rainier. Just an amazing guy.
Robert Vera with us, A Warrior's Faith Chronicles. Ryan Jobe's amazing life from the time he was wounded and made blind to his summit on Mount Rainier. What was that like, and can you tell us about the elk hunting as well?
Yeah, it was a funny story. One day Ryan calls me up. Now remember, he's completely blind. He was shot in the face. He lost one eye, and the swelling cut off blood flow through the optic nerve, and he was blind in his other eye. So he called me up one day and he said, "Hey, can you take me to the airport?" I said, "Sure, you know." So he gets in the car. I'm driving to the airport. I say, "Hey, by the way, where are you going?" And he just grins and says, "Elk hunting." So I say, "Hey, you know, you got to see him to hunt him, right?" He said, yeah, don't worry about that. I got that sorted out. Then I said, you may not want to tell the other hunters that you're blind, because you know how those guys are. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, don't worry about that. You know, how do you like your elk? You know, burgers or chops? I said, you can surprise me. So a couple days later, Ryan texted me a picture of a 980-pound elk that he melted with one shot. He literally was unstoppable. Just couldn't, you know, there was nothing that he really couldn't do. I mean, despite his blindness, I mean, he graduated from college with a 4.0 grade point average. He was married, and he achieved this all after he was wounded and left. I mean, left for dead on the roof, basically. You know, the sniper, it was he was shot in the head by a sniper. His SEAL team didn't think he was going to make it, and then, you know, 3 years on, Ryan's climbing mountains and hunting elk and going to college. He had a full-time job. He was already lined up, and he was enrolled to be enrolled in a master's degree program. So he just really was an amazing guy and just accomplished so much in a short period of time. I mean, even becoming a Navy SEAL, which is perhaps one of the most arduous trainings anyone could ever go through. I mean, it was never a question in his mind that he would do it. He would become a SEAL.
You've detailed a lot in your book, A Warrior's Faith, but what do you remember about Ryan? What are your fondest memories as far as just hanging out, maybe? Or maybe it was him reliving something that happened either in Iraq or after, or just the character of the individual?
Yeah, one of the things that stand out with me with Ryan is he had just the greatest sense of humor. You know, he never, it was a weapon in a way for Ryan. He just put people, you know, at ease about his condition, about his experience. And, you know, when others would sort of, you know, be, you know, just sort of afraid to ask questions. I mean, I remember a story about Ryan. He was riding a metro train, and there was a little kid sitting beside him, and the kid kept asking his mother about Ryan's eye because he had a, you know, a fairly obvious wound where his eye used to be. And Ryan, the family and Ryan got off the train, and the kid walked up to Ryan and asked, Mister, you know, what happened to your face? You know, what's wrong with your eye? And Ryan leaned down and said, never run with scissors. And, you know, he just had this great sense of humor. You know, I finished writing the manuscript and I sent it to my editor, and she called me and said, hey, I have to ask you, you know, it seems like, you know, Ryan, you know, really never had any hard days. I mean, you know, what, you know, did he ever bemoan the fact that he was blind? And this is something that I'll never forget. I said, you know, I don't want to answer that right away. Let me think about it. So I thought about it over the weekend. I called her back on Monday. I said, you know, I have to tell you something. Ryan Jobe never once complained to me or bemoaned the fact that he was blind. In fact, what he said to me was that he was grateful that he was the one who was shot on the roof because he could take it, and that he was grateful for all the opportunities that had come to him, even though that he was blind. There wasn't a hint of regret in Ryan Jobe at all.
Well, Mr. Vera, a lesson for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, if we could all live like that, not being victims, not wanting, you know, just Ryan Jobe had, you know, he invested in two things, his faith and hard work. He would, you know, he didn't want handouts. He didn't want anyone to feel sorry for him. Ryan Jobe was just an amazing, when I tell you, one of the most amazing people I've ever met. Just this guy was as hard as they come. He was grateful and gracious, just a, you know, a really just an exceptional human being. I think we should all try to emulate Ryan's faith and hard work. He was just a great guy.
How has he changed you? Obviously, you've written the book, A Warrior's Faith, that'll be out March 3rd with HarperCollins, but, you know, you've written it in the book, you've shared it with us, but, I mean, you know, at night, or maybe you see something, maybe it's an elk, maybe it's Mount Rainier, maybe it's the Chris Kyle situation, the murder trial going on. And you talked about his sense of humor, but, you know, when guys hang out and talk, you have that bond. Is there anything else that we're missing here?
Well, I think that, you know, the reason why I wanted to write the book is really to thank Ryan and to honor the people that he knew and loved. And, you know, it's curious that Ryan, you know, his last name is Job. I knew no other Job save for the Job in the Bible. And Ryan and I used to sort of joke around about it. I mean, you know, Job, if you know the story of Job in the Bible, he suffers, but yet he's still faithful. And, you know, it's uncanny that Ryan had the same conditions and never gave up his faith. And I think that's what, really, after Ryan's passing, that's what he influenced me. I mean, I think that, you know, my faith in a Savior was really influenced greatly by Ryan Jobe. I mean, it was, you know, one of the things I'll just tell you that happened is that at the end, you know, sadly, I won't give away the book, but many will probably find out that Ryan passed from this world due to a medical error after surgery to repair the wounds of war. He died on September 24th, 2009. And, you know, really just so tragic. And I write that, you know, it's perhaps more tragic than Chris's death. I mean, in a way. I mean, they're both ultimately really tragic, but it does prove that the real war is here. You know, Ryan and I used to joke about the Book of Job all the time. And he used to ask me, you know, how do I look? You know, how did I do? And I say, yeah, you're golden, you know, and I would quote that there's a Job passage 23:10, though he knows the way I take, and when he tests me, I shall come forth as gold. And at Ryan's funeral, I let Ryan out with his guide dog. Prior to that, I didn't know it was going to happen. I don't think anybody knew it was going to happen. You know, his SEAL community came to the funeral. There was several hundred Navy SEALs there, and each one of them, after the eulogy, I gave a eulogy, and each one after the service, you know, walked up to Ryan's casket, and they pounded their golden trident into Ryan's casket. and was done, Ryan's casket was completely covered in golden tridents. So I was walking Ryan out, leading him out. Ryan was right behind me in his casket, and I looked back. Just for some reason, I just had to look back at him. And I turned around, and there he was, Ryan Jobe, coming forth as gold. Just like, you know, I used to say to him, and that's not a sign to, you know, to me, hey, you know, it's about your faith. I don't know what is. So, I mean, I'm grateful for Ryan for that, for showing me, for living the gospel, not telling me the gospel, but just living it. And that's exactly what he did every day. He lived with faith and forgiveness and was all in all the time. Never, ever took one day of his life for granted.
Mr. Vera, can you hang on for a minute?
Sure.
All right, more coming up with Robert Vera, Kevin Miller in the morning here. Again, veterans' issues, when they come home, how to help them, always very important, and remembering these heroes that have done so much for us. And in the victimization society that we have today, these guys have no excuses. They drive on. What makes it happen? We'll find out next. Time for traffic now.
Treasure Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller, KIDOAM.com, 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Robert Vera joining us, author of A Warrior's Faith. Ryan Jobe's story. Did Ryan ever talk about his relationship with Chris Kyle and what happened to Chris?
Well, you know, Ryan and Chris are obviously, you know, close friends. I mean, Ryan, Chris writes about Ryan Jobe in his book, American Sniper. Just in terms of the timing, you know, Chris and Ryan were in Ramadi, Iraq together. In August of 2006, they were there from April to August of 2006. Ryan was wounded in August of 2006, came home. Ryan passed from this world in September 24th, 2009. Chris was actually a pallbearer at Ryan's funeral. I actually gave the eulogy at Ryan's funeral. And Ryan, Chris passed, was murdered in 2013, in February of 2013. I was at Chris's funeral as well. But, you know, Ryan and Chris were good friends. I mean, after Ryan was wounded, Chris came to Arizona to visit Ryan often. You know, Chris had, he was still basically in the Navy when Ryan passed away. He was making a decision to get out. If he stayed in, it would have been his fifth tour. But at that point, I think that he, you know, had made a decision that he needed to be with his family and come home. The last time I saw Chris Kyle was in January of 2012. Actually, I asked Chris to write the foreword to the book about this book, A Warrior's Faith. We were in Las Vegas at, many of your listeners may know, the SHOT Show in Las Vegas. We were at the SHOT Show together. Chris, I had not seen Chris since, 2009. We had talked on the phone. We'd passed each other sort of, you know, going past each other at different places. And, I had not seen him since 2009, except for the fact that I saw him over at the SHOT Show. And he had, you know, just gone on with his life. He had, one of the weirdest things for me is that, you know, Chris and I were friends. I mean, I met him at Ryan's funeral. Ryan ended, you know, through Ryan's funeral, I knew of Ryan's friends and the SEAL team and I knew many of them. And, you know, Chris never said to me, the movie is in the book is oddly strange to me because as friends of Chris, he would never mention to you what he did in the SEAL team. I didn't even know that, you know, he was a sniper. I had no idea because it wasn't, we talked about, like you set up a tactical company. We talked about that. We talked about his business. We talked about kids. We talked about anything else, but he was not, there was no bravado in Chris Kyle. He's not going to go out and, you know, tell you about what he did. He was just that type of guy. He wasn't somebody that bragged about, you know, those things. He was just, you know, a great guy. I mean, just like Ryan, he was more interested in your success than his own. He was, you know, more engaging. He was just a great guy. He would not talk about, you know, any of those things. I never knew until I read the book what Chris Kyle did as a Navy SEAL.
Finally, for you, you know, you write about this in A Warrior's Faith. You just alluded to it. What was it like to give the eulogy at Ryan's funeral, considering this great man did so much, sacrificed so much, but always gave back, including making sure that you had a laugh every now and then?
Yeah, I mean, it was really, I mean, even sort of now, it's you know, frankly, a little more bitter than sweet to tell Ryan's story when he should be here. I mean, he died of a avoidable medical error in the hospital of Arizona. There were so many people that risked their lives to save Ryan. In fact, Mark Lee, Ryan's Navy SEAL colleague and Chris's colleague, was shot and killed the day Ryan was wounded, going after the insurgents that shot Ryan. You know, so many people that risked their lives to save Ryan. The doctors in Ramadi, Ryan's SEAL team, I mean, they literally, like, risked their lives to save Ryan. And, you know, knowing that and standing in front of, you know, everyone to honor Ryan's life, you know, it was just, I mean, I was proud to be able to do it and honored. But you have these people that, you know, are you know, they're angry, upset, confused. I mean, what do you say? I mean, the only thing I could do is just honor Ryan's life the best way I could and just tell how funny he was and, you know, what he did for me. I mean, that's what I said at the funeral, is Ryan Job really brought me to a deeper relationship with my Savior Jesus Christ. And you know, I think it was really, I'm so grateful for Ryan to doing that. I think he was inserted into my life and many, the lives of many others to deliver that message that, you know, hey, you can get after it, you know, keep going, don't be a victim. And, I mean, I'll just tell you real quickly, you know, Ryan Job, after being shot in the face by a sniper on a rooftop, his friends thought he was dead, sat up, you know, after he was shot, sat up, said he was okay. He didn't want to be a burden to his team. Chris tried to carry him. Ryan told Chris, put me down, I'm walking. He did not want his friends to, you know, be burdened by him. He knew they needed every gun. At that point, it was a gunfight. At that point, he knew they needed every gun in the fight. Ryan evacuated himself off the roof after being shot in the face. I mean, just this guy was selfless. I mean, just an amazing story. And he just, I mean, how I found out about a lot of the things that Ryan did, one day I was, he asked me to get something out of his closet. I pulled down this box that I thought was what he wanted. I opened it up, there's a bunch of medals in it. I said, what is this from? And he told me the story of how he won the Bronze Star. Never once told me, you know, that he won a Bronze Star. I found him in a shoebox hidden back in his closet. Just really one of the most selfless, hardworking guys you'd ever meet. Just really an incredible story. His eulogy was, it was difficult, but, you know, really just, I was so honored to be able to know Ryan Job and to honor him in that way.
Mr. Vera, we'd love to have you back, you know, the week your book is released. We appreciate it. A Warrior's Faith. Thank you for your time and your service.
Yeah, on behalf of myself and my family and to all the veterans out there who have sacrificed and given your service to this country, I'd like to say thank you very much for your service.
Have a good day, sir.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Robert Vera with us. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's kind of rub it in with Rachel Sutherland of Fox News Radio. Currently, 28, but that's balmy compared to what's going on the East Coast. What you heard Larry Gebert high today in the 50s. Probably going to creep down about 47 later in the week. But, Rachel, how are you?
I'm all right, Kevin. It's about 16 degrees in Washington, D.C. You know, we didn't get as much snow as we thought we would. They were calling from anywhere from 8 to 10 to even 12 inches, but basically in D.C. proper, about 2 to 4 outside in the suburbs, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, depending where you are. I'd say the general consensus is around 4 inches. But, you know, Kevin, that's enough to pretty much shut down the government. Federal government's closed today, school, things like that. So Washington really just can't handle the snow.
Apparently, so much for all the other issues that we have to deal with, like the budget, ISIS, the Sunday shows. We've all just shut down because of a few inches of snow.
Right. Well, you know, the Congress wasn't going to be in session anyway today, but at the White House, it's business as usual. Ashton Carter will be sworn in as Secretary of Defense. So things are going on as usual, at least there at the White House. But otherwise, yeah, the government here, local government, schools, federal government, they usually make the decision to close. Just because, you know, Washington, we're notorious for this. I grew up in this area. It's ridiculous. Every year the same thing. The panic, the bread and milk and alcohol flying off the shelves with flakes in the forecast, people just really freaking out about it. And it's because a lot of times plows won't get to side streets for sometimes several days in a real heavy snowfall.
Well, is that everywhere that, you know, we hear the snow coming down, we all rush to the store and we get everything? And unless,
yeah, I guess it happens everywhere, but definitely here in the D.C. area. And you'd think no one had owned a snow shovel in their lives. I mean, those go flying off the shelf. And when we had this a few years back, actually more than that now, 2009, the Snowmageddon thing, it was the biggest snowfall we'd ever had here in the Washington area. And that was just ridiculous. It was the mounds of snow that were way up above our heads, you know, from the plows, and side streets didn't get touched for a long time. And in the middle of DuPont Circle, there was this huge kind of flash mob snowball fight that actually, in the middle of it, an undercover cop pulled a gun and people freaked out. It was they were just all just having cabin fever. They still do the DuPont Circle snowball fight on occasion, but I think they have one planned for this morning, but I'm not sure if there's really enough good snow for that.
Maybe you could get Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner out there.
I've been out there to the DuPont Circle snowball fight. Never seen them. Did end up with the flu one year. But, yeah, this particular snowfall that we have is light and fluffy, and it won't make for good snowballs or snowmen at any rate. But I imagine they'll be out there in a DuPont Circle sometime today.
Let me ask you, since you're from that area, what's it like as far as living there when you have all these folks that come in and, you know, usually the weekends and the summer they're gone? It must make for an interesting culture, if you will.
Well, yeah, it depends on where someone lives in the Washington area. I actually have a condo outside of Washington on a river called the Occoquan, and so I'm about 20 miles south. So the Washington area is just really huge. I mean, we're talking about suburban Maryland, northern Virginia, and all of Washington itself. And so each little area has its own little personality. So if you're living in the suburbs, you know, it's going to be a different kind of lifestyle, a lot of commuting, a lot of sitting in traffic. If you're living in Georgetown, you might notice a lot more of the tourists and as they come and go. I work at our D.C. bureau is right down there near Capitol Hill, where there's Union Station and the Capitol building. At Union Station, there's usually a bunch of tour buses. There are a lot of tourists that walk around, and you'll notice on days like these, I don't know if the tour buses are even going to be running. They're kind of these double-decker things, and who'd want to sit on top of one of those today? So, yeah, there's definitely different flavors, you know, wherever you live in the Washington area. And, yeah, I was actually born in what's called Alexandria Hospital, right outside of Washington, so I'm one of those rare natives.
You and Pat Buchanan. Now, there's a couple.
Well, I can't really claim him, but okay.
Well, he's a native to that area like you. But finally, when the snow does clear and the folks all come back, you know, you're always working. So anything that we could look forward to this week, you think?
Well, you know, we're looking forward to more discussion about funding ISIS. Of course, Congress not in session at this point. When they get back next week, that's when the showdown is going to come when it comes to Homeland Security funding and having to do with the president's executive order on immigration or executive actions, I should say. So that showdown is going to be looming when they return. This week will probably be pretty quiet unless there's news coming out of the White House. And as I mentioned today, Ash Carter will be sworn in by Vice President Joe Biden in the Roosevelt Room here in probably just a couple of hours. So that is stuff going on in D.C., but other than that, it's pretty quiet when it snows here.
Well, Rachel, we appreciate it, and you have a good day and stay warm.
Thanks.
Rachel Sutherland joining us from Fox News Radio. Kevin Miller in the morning at 580 KIDO, and if you were working yesterday, or it seems like listening to the radio or television, that if you watch the Fox News channel or thankfully listen to Kevin Miller in the morning, it's always work. And there are just so many issues that we need to discuss, none bigger than the comments made yesterday on CNN. Let's take a listen.
StoryCorps happened to have featured Yusor Abu Salah, one of the Chapel Hill victims, in a story last May talking about her heritage and her love for the United States. Take a listen.
So many ways that I feel so embedded in the fabric that is, you know, our culture.
Yusor was married.
Now it sounds good. She's talking about loving America.
Married to Dia Barakat, the 23-year-old dental student who was also killed Tuesday. Let's bring in Dia's sister, Suzanne Barakat. Suzanne, first of all, obviously our deepest condolences to you and your family for this senseless and brutal act. I hope that you and your family are at least finding comfort in the interest and support in this case from all over the world.
Thank you for having me, Jake. It has been tremendously heartwarming to see the outpouring of love and support. The way it started, I would say, the day of the murders, an assemblywoman from the state I live in used the hashtag Stand Up Against Islam. And it's currently an open season, a time where it's an open season against Islam, Muslims in Washington, Muslims in the general media, dehumanizing Muslims in movies like American Sniper. It's incredibly...
There you have it. Apparently, according to this lady that has suffered a tragedy, it's open season on Muslims. And movies like American Sniper dehumanize Muslims. No mention of the 20-some Christians that were killed because they were Christians in Egypt. But right now, let's just let her comments sit by themselves at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let me repeat, it's currently open season against Islam. Muslims in Washington, Muslims in general media are dehumanized in movies like American Sniper. You know, it's funny that we have people like Michael Moore and others criticizing real-life heroes like Chris Kyle. You heard the story of Ryan Jobe. And when are we going to wake up? What do you think? 580-5436. I couldn't believe when I heard that statement moments ago that it's, according to her, war on Islam, war on the Muslims. Not if you ask the administration. I'll explain next. Kevin Miller, 580-KIDO.
Are we the United States of America, or are we America run by Washington, D.C.?
We are not just a ragtag bunch of people out here that are on the fringes.
I think President Obama might be auditioning for the Jimmy Kimmel spot once he gets out of office.
Let's get it started.
Must Hear Radio every morning with Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
So there we have the sister of the slain UNC student saying that there is a war on Islam. Now, the White House reacted concerning the Islamic radicals with a very different approach. In fact, we have this issue involving the White House and others where they're talking about these Egyptians that were killed, and they just said Egyptian citizens. Now, remember, these were Egyptian Christians that were killed because they were followers of the cross. Followers of the cross. Now, where is the trouble alert? Where is the red light going on and on and on? And where is our reaction? You have the King of Jordan bombing ISIS. You have the Egyptians taking it to ISIS. And you have our administration saying, well, I think we need to give these folks job opportunities. That's right. Job opportunities. We can't win this war if the State Department doesn't give these folks job opportunities. Listen to this here at 580-KIDO from our friend Chris Matthews.
The underworld Shia. The Sunnis hate them. The Sunnis are loyal to ISIS rather than going in with the Shia. You've got the Kurds, the Jordanian Air Force, and now the Egyptian Air Force. But I don't see any... If I were ISIS, I wouldn't be afraid right now. I didn't figure there's no existential threat to these people. They can keep finding places where they can hold executions and putting the camera work together, getting their props ready, and killing people for show. And nothing we do right now seems to be directed at stopping this.
Well, I think there's a few stages here. Right now what we're doing is trying to take their leaders and their fighters off the battlefield in Iraq and in Syria. That's really where they flourish.
Are we killing enough of them?
We're killing a lot of them, and we're going to keep killing more of them. So are the Egyptians, so are the Jordanians. They're in this fight with us. But we cannot win this war by killing them. We cannot kill our way out of this war. We need, in the longer term, medium and longer term, to go after the root causes that...
Since when have we never been able to kill ourselves out of a war? Tell that to the Germans, tell that to the Japanese, tell that to the Koreans, tell that to the Vietnamese, tell that to the Iraqis. Now, this is an interesting foreign policy here. We can't, did you hear that? We can't kill ourselves out of the war.
leads people to join these groups, whether it's lack of opportunity for jobs.
We're not going to be able to stop that in our lifetime. Or 50-
I love this. The reason why they're killing us, they're killing Christians, it's because they don't have any jobs. Okay, our country is broke. We've rebuilt Afghanistan. We've rebuilt Iraq. And now all of a sudden, we're going to give jobs to ISIS? Should somebody come up with a T-shirt, Jobs for ISIS?
Lifetimes. There's always going to be poor people. There's always going to be poor Muslims. And as long as there are poor Muslims, the trumpet's blowing. They'll join. We can't stop that, can we?
We can work with countries around the world to help improve their governance. We can help them build their economy so they can have job opportunities for these people. You're right. There is no...
Job opportunities for terrorists. I think I've heard it all. Let's go to Linda and Emmett with Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Kevin. Where do I start?
Well, you got 20 seconds because we're going to traffic.
Okay. I am so disgusted with our president, with his, you know, these 20, quote-unquote people. I can't even remember exactly what the words are that he used, were killed yesterday.
Egyptian citizens.
Yes, Egyptian citizens. What in the Sam Hill is it going to take for him to wake up and realize that it's not just, you know, it's not the air war that's going to do it. We're going to have to put boots on the ground over there. I know nobody wants to hear that.
Linda, great call. Got to run traffic now at 580KI. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Coming up next, is there a war on Islam, according to this... KIDO.